Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Robert Arneson of The Western Producer, your host for this week's show. Predicting the weather for tomorrow is fairly simple, but forecasting rainfall and temperatures for the next 30 days can be a tricky business. On today's show, we'll hear from a climate specialist with Agriculture Canada who has developed a new prediction tool called the Drought Outlook. We'll also take a detailed look at grain production data from Ukraine, which has become a major competitor for Canada in the global market. Finally, the city of Lethbridge is hosting an event this summer that could be described as the Amazing Race, but the contestants won't travel the world. They will learn about agriculture in southern Alberta.
Part of being a farmer is being an accountant and a mechanic and a chemist. You have lots on the go. So FarmLink makes your grain marketing go further. We help you reach your financial goals with calculated sales decisions. No bias, just solutions and results. Plus, with our new app, GrainFox, we bring every opportunity right to your fingertips. Literally. Start seeing the returns that'll get your family ahead. You've earned it. FarmLink. Your work is worth more. Get started at farmlinksolutions.ca.
First up, much of southern Manitoba is still in a drought. Since September 1st, the region has received less than 50% of the normal amount of precipitation. Farmers in the region know they're in a drought, but what they really want to know is, when will it end? To help answer that question, weather experts at Agriculture Canada have developed a new forecasting tool called the Drought Outlook. Joining us to explain what it is and how it works is Trevor Hadwin, an agri-climate specialist with Ag Canada in Regina. Hey Trevor, thanks for coming on Between the Rows.
Good morning.
So, as I mentioned in the introduction, there is a prolonged drought in parts of the Eastern Prairies. And farmers in the region, you know the situation. What have you done here with this drought outlook? What are you trying to accomplish, or what new information are you trying to bring to the table?
Yeah, so as you're mentioning, Canada is a country that has drought quite frequently. It's part of our normal climate cycle. And our drought outlook is intended to provide some advanced warning in terms of the weather conditions into the future. So Canada currently has a very effective monitoring and reporting system for current conditions, known as the Canadian Drought Monitor. However, up until now, we have not been able to have a good way to forecast future conditions and to provide farmers or other resource managers with the ability to look forward and see what those drought conditions might look like into the future. So the Drought Outlook provides Canada with one more tool that will help farmers as well as other resource managers better prepared. The hope is that Drought Outlook will help lessen the impact of drought and lead to better management practices during a drought.
Okay, so this is not just for the prairie region. This Drought Outlook tool is for coast to coast, all of Canada.
Yeah, we currently monitor drought throughout Canada, including the two territories. We do not do drought monitoring in Nunavut currently. So the Drought Outlook follows that pattern, and we monitor all of the 10 Canadian provinces and two of the territories.
Okay. So the drought monitor, you know, is more like looking backwards, saying, okay, in the last 6 months, a year, we've had this amount of rainfall. This is our soil moisture situation. And then that leads to, you know, a statement or sort of a synopsis of where we're at now in terms of dry conditions. Can you sort of explain how this drought outlook works? Like, how do you go about predicting what's going to happen for the next several weeks when it comes to precipitation and weather?
Yeah, certainly. The Drought Outlook is very much linked towards the Canadian Drought Monitor. So the Canadian Drought Monitor provides us with our monthly updates on extent and severity of drought. That provides us our starting point for the Drought Outlook. We take that drought assessment at the end of each month and link it toward together with our 30-day forecast from Environment and Climate Change Canada to provide a future climate scenario for 30 days out into the future. So we basically use the forecast data. We calculate a variety of drought indices to determine the probable future state of drought. So this allows us to classify drought as improving, degrading, or remaining the same.
Okay. So let's just look at an actual case then. So as I said, you know, we're still in a drought in parts of the Eastern Prairie, especially in Southern Manitoba. So if we use the Drought Outlook tool right now, what does it say about what's going to be the situation come, you know, the third week of July?
Yeah, so our Drought Outlook is run at the beginning of each month. And so we're a little bit dated in terms of our outlook now, since it's the middle of the month. But our Drought Outlook is looking at some improvement in the southern portion of Manitoba and Saskatchewan, some drought removal in some of the northern regions, especially in Saskatchewan, and then drought staying the same throughout much of central and northern agricultural regions of Manitoba and Saskatchewan.
Okay. So I guess the big question, you know, if I'm a farmer or, you know, anybody who's dependent upon the weather, how do I know that this is reliable, this outlook? What's your level of confidence in the, you know, the outlook and how reliable this tool is going to be?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've been running this model for just under a year. We've been tweaking it through that year to try to make it better and better all the time. However, like all weather forecasts, there's going to be times where the forecast is more accurate and times where it's less accurate. The atmosphere is very complex and always changing, and that provides a significant challenge to long-range forecasting. So the more time between when a forecast is made and when the forecast is for, the more chance there is for something to change in the atmosphere, which makes it the results in an inaccurate forecast. So 30 days is an area that is challenging for sure. We can provide some general trends on climate, but it's not always going to be perfectly accurate. We're looking at 21 different model forecasts for our drought outlook. So we look at a variety of forecast tools from Environment and Climate Change Canada and from around the world. Those models are all thrown together, and we utilize the most likely scenario from that 21 models to develop our drought outlook. So we're basically taking that forecast, looking at for the best forecast or the most, where all the forecasts are kind of showing that the conditions are going to go to. We overlay that on top of our current drought situation, and the model for the drought model, it looks at how that drought, the drought situation has changed over history in similar situations. So if we're going to receive a little bit of rain midsummer and we had a fairly significant drought, the model is going to say that rain is likely not enough rain to remove the drought. It might improve it, but it might not even improve it enough to warrant a class change or an improvement. So it's a fairly complex model looking at how droughts develop and how droughts, how rainfall and moisture levels affect those droughts into the future.
Okay. To be clear then, we're not just talking about looking at a variety of different long-term weather forecasts. We're also looking at the historical record. So for example, in, let's just pick a year, 1988, in that summer, we received whatever amount of rain on July, I don't know, I'll just make up a date, July 24th. What did that do in terms of reducing the drought severity? You can then use that information to come to a conclusion about what's going to happen with this current drought. Is that correct?
That's correct. So we look at the last 20 years of our drought assessments, and we've actually gone back and picked historically dry periods throughout the last 50 to 100 years and done a drought assessment on that year so that the model can be trained to know what to do when we hit a drought like 1988, for example. And if we're in July of 1988 and we received 3 inches of rain, would that have resulted in better improvements to soil moisture and removed the drought impacts? If that was the case in 1988, it likely will be an improvement in 2021. So that's all modeled into there, and the model continuously learns from itself as we move throughout time.
It sounds like you've been working on this for quite a while. Are there similar drought outlook tools in other parts of the world, or did you guys come up with this on your own? How did that work?
Yeah, so there's drought forecasting has existed in some of the regions of the world for several years. Most of them have been fairly simplistic, relying on direct forecasts and looking at precipitation conditions, versus looking at current drought situation and then moving to a forecasted precipitation and looking at the impacts. So with the advancements in computing technology and machine learning and a better understanding of drought, more and more countries around the world are starting to develop forecasting systems. Right now, the United States is the most similar to ours. However, there is one big difference. The U.S. looks at drought conditions from the U.S. Drought Monitor and then applies a group of meteorologists to that drought to determine the future state of drought, looking at a wide variety of things directly from the expert interpretation. We've tried to take that expert interpretation and model it. So we're basically trying to utilize a computer model to develop the future state of drought instead of having meteorologists look at it and develop that state. So it is a fairly unique model, and it's one that we're very excited to share and see how it works with producers. In addition to that, we are continuing to improve the model. The model itself will improve by itself through the machine learning that's programmed in, but also in terms of getting better forecast data from Environment and Climate Change Canada and looking at different aspects of drought and including them into the model. So we're certainly not done with the development of this. This is stage one of our drought forecasting, and we're quite excited to see how it works and hear comments about it.
Okay, last one. Where can producers and other Canadians who are interested in this new drought outlook tool, where can they find it?
Yeah, so this information's all published on the Agriculture Agri-Food Canada's Drought Watch website. So if they just Google Drought Watch and look for the Canadian Drought Outlook, or they can Google the Canadian Drought Outlook directly and they'll be able to find it there.
You've been listening to Trevor Hadwin, an agri-climate specialist with Agriculture Canada in Regina, who spoke about a new drought forecasting tool for Canadian farmers. Next up, it seems hard to believe, but Ukraine now produces more grain and oilseeds than all of Canada. Most of the country's wheat, sunflowers, corn, and canola is exported, which means Ukraine competes directly with Canada in the global market for grains and oilseeds. Sean Pratt, a reporter of the Western Producer in Saskatoon, joins us now to discuss the incredible growth in Ukrainian grain production over the last two decades. Hey, Sean, thanks for coming on Between the Rows. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries.
You recently published a story about Ukraine, looking in detail at some of their grain production data for the last couple of decades. And in the story, there was a chart. It's pretty much like an eye-popping chart that showed how much you know, their grain, oilseed, and pulse production has increased over the last 20 years. Can you share with us some of the information in that chart?
Yeah, I think eye-popping is a good way to describe it. The chart goes back to 2001, and at that time, they were producing, I think it was 42 million tons of grain and exporting about 9.5 million tons of that of those, you know, grain, pulses, oilseeds. Flash forward to 2021, and they're forecasting, and when I say they, it's the it's the Ukrainian Grain Association, is forecasting 97.3 million tons of production and nearly 60 million tons of exports. And in fact, you know, the guy I was speaking to from the Ukrainian Grain Association, he was presenting at a conference. He was saying that that 97 million ton estimate might be shy, you know, might be underestimating it. He thinks it looks like more over 100 million tons of production. So, you know, going from 10 million tons to 100 million tons over a 20-year stretch is pretty remarkable. And it's been this sort of, you know, bumps around up and down a little bit, but it's just been a real steady trend line upwards. And there's no end in sight, apparently, there. So it's really, truly is eye-popping.
Let's just put that in context for a second. So when I look at the data for Canada, if you look at our different crops, you know, wheat, canola, soybeans, corn, pulse crops, whatever, our total is more like, what, 80 million tons or 85 million tons? Like, where are we at in Canada?
Well, I don't have the stats in front of me, but that, you know, that sounds about right. And our production, you know, by contrast, will have been fairly static by comparison. Ukraine's just really coming on like gangbusters here. So, yeah, it's an apples and oranges scenario. They've just really poured it on here in the last couple of decades. And as I said earlier, the person I was speaking to was saying that, you know, they believe by 2026, so over the next 5 years, production is going to climb to 113 million tons. And their exports will be up in that sort of 70 to 80 million ton area. So
their exports alone could be kind of the size of Canada's grain, oilseed, and pulse crop in totality.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I guess this suggests that, you know, farming under communism wasn't all that efficient. I mean, that's one conclusion you could draw here.
Yeah, it's sort of, that's really true. Like, it coincides with the end of communism and this sort of shift to capitalism. And they seem to, you know, the production really seemed to take off. And the Ukraine has, like, some really fertile land. They said in this presentation that they have 25% of the world's you know, most fertile black soil is in Ukraine.
Right,
and they've also got a plethora of rivers and lakes, and so they are really starting to irrigate more land, and that's where they think a lot of the growth is going to come from in the future. That you know, that they're going to increase the amount of irrigation that they're doing, and thus boost yield. So they're not really anticipating too much more in terms of acres, but really continued growth on the yield front.
Okay. When I think of Ukraine, the crops that come to mind are wheat, sunflowers, maybe a bit of canola. What are some of the other crops that I'm not thinking of?
Well, they're a really big producer of corn and a big exporter of corn as well. So they're a major player in the corn scene. But also, you know, of late, they've really got into producing some pulses. So they will compete with Canada on that front as well in a variety of different markets. So, yeah, they're one of our main competitors on many fronts. Like you mentioned, wheat, canola, pulses, and corn.
And I think also, you know, communism and going back to that era, I think of, you know, poor infrastructure, you know, maybe railways that don't really work that well. They might have, you know, poor grain elevators that are sort of old fashioned or out of date. I'm guessing Ukraine has dumped millions or billions into its infrastructure to improve all that. So I guess the question is, can they now get all of that massive amount of grain to port?
Yeah, and the answer to that is most definitely, according to this, the president of the Ukrainian Grain Association, he mentioned that, you know, really on many fronts, Ukraine has been improving their grain transportation infrastructure. And for instance, the country now has 28,000 rail hopper cars, up from 10,000 3 years ago. So, and they've done lots of, there's been lots of work done at, you know, in terms of building export terminals at the ports, and they're improving their river system. They right now the river system's handling about 10% of the grain traffic that arrives at the ports. They think that will expand quite significantly due to some new legislation that's coming. Anyway, he said that Ukraine can now load without any problem 70 to 80 million tons of grain per year. So, you know, when we flash forward to 2026 and they're anticipating, they're saying 79.2 million tons of exports. Well, that fits right in that 70 to 80 million ton, you know, capacity that they've got right now to export. So they really have come a long way on that front.
I just heard my dog barking outside, so maybe we should wrap this up. So I just got one more question for you, Sean, and that is for Canadian producers, the big question is, what does this all mean? Does this mean that perhaps there's some markets that we have traditionally sold wheat, oilseeds, and pulses to that we might lose in the future because Ukraine has a geographic advantage over us? Or what do you think this means?
Yeah, I think definitely one market to worry about is China. China accounted for 25% of Ukraine's grain exports in 2020. So, you know, they're already a big player in that market. And, I think that they can compete with Canada on the canola front, on you know, wheat and pulses in that market. So, I think China is a big one. And the other key markets that they ship grain to are the European Union, the Middle East, and also North Africa. So those are all markets that Canada is heavily involved in as well. So, yeah, they're definitely a looming threat.
All right. Well, I better go let my dog in. But you've been listening to Sean Pratt, a reporter with the Western Producer in Saskatoon, who's been speaking about the massive growth in grain production in Ukraine. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Robert.
For the last 16 months, COVID-19 has severely disrupted the tourism industry across Canada and around the globe. To jumpstart tourism in southern Alberta, groups in Lethbridge are hosting an event in August called the Lethbridge Odyssey. Here to tell us more about this event is Melissa Bazan, a journalism student at the University of Regina and intern with the Western Producer. Hey Melissa, thanks for coming on Between the Rows.
Thanks for having me.
I came across a story that you're working on and will soon be published in the Western Producer, and that is about this event in Lethbridge called the Lethbridge Odyssey. Can you tell me more about that? What is that?
So the Lethbridge Odyssey is this competition race style thing that's happening in southern Alberta. It's kind of supposed to be similar to the Amazing Race. And you'll be in teams of two, and you'll be traveling across southern Alberta to look at different monuments and to do different events and hands-on activities to learn a little bit about agriculture. And it's just supposed to be a fun way to learn about agriculture and a little bit of a competition for people to start traveling again across the province.
Is this event open to anybody in Canada, or is this designed for folks just who are residents of Alberta?
No, yeah, it can be anyone from across Canada, especially with borders opening now. It'd be a really great way to start traveling again. I know they're expecting people from British Columbia and Saskatchewan, especially since those are the provinces that border Alberta. So yeah, anyone could come to Lethbridge and partake in this little event.
The Amazing Race, it goes on where people travel around the world to different locations. Is this Lethbridge Odyssey a one-day event, or does it last over a weekend, or what does it look like?
Yeah, it's a weekend event, and there's lots of different things too. So like some of it is hands-on events that, you know, you kind of get down and dirty for, and then other ones are more intellectual. You learn a little bit about Indigenous culture through this, and some of them is just like taking a selfie with a monument. So yeah, it's over a weekend, and there's lots of different things to do during it. So yeah,
teams of two, and people will be traveling in their own vehicle, and then I guess the idea is to complete this as quickly as possible, or is it about gaining knowledge about agriculture, southern Alberta, the history of the region? How do they decide who's the winner?
Right, yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think the main purpose of the Odyssey is to teach people about agritourism and the agriculture specifically around Lethbridge, but there is a $5,000 prize. So I think it's a bit of a race. You want to complete it first. And then on Sunday of the event, there's also a bit of a quiz to kind of sum up what you've learned. So it's a bit of both. There is a prize, but, you know, a lot of the events, or a few of them, work with producers. So you get to see exactly what happens on these specific farms or these specific, like, plantations. So, yeah, it's both a bit of a race, but also equally as important learning about agriculture in the area.
There will be then, like, several stations or stops at, you know, actual working farms, whether it be a cattle ranch or a grain farm or whatever.
Yeah, there is. They're keeping the specific, like, events secret for now. They're supposed to be a surprise, but they have partnered with some producers to get that hands-on experience on the farm to just enhance that kind of learning privilege to see exactly what happens with these producers and their day-to-day lives.
Okay, I should have asked this question a few minutes ago, but I'll ask it now. Can you explain who is organizing this event? And just, I think you already answered this, but why specifically are they doing this?
Right, so it's the Lethbridge Lodging Association and Lethbridge Lodging Association and the Lethbridge Exhibition.
Okay.
So they are putting it on together, and I think it's equally about, you know, teaching people about agriculture as it is, you know, starting up tourism again in the area. I mean, obviously, COVID has, you know, put tourism to a stop in a lot of places, but now things are opening up again. So like for this one, part of registering for it is, you know, just contacting a hotel in Lethbridge and then telling them you're there for the Odyssey And then that means that you're registered. So it's, you know, filling up their hotels again and, you know, getting tourism started again in the area. And I think, like, they made it a road trip kind of so that people could, you know, still feel safe with, you know, the pandemic still happening. So that's why you're in teams of two and you're just traveling on your own so that you're still a little bit, you know, safer. And it doesn't really matter what restrictions are like at that point because you're just in your vehicle with a friend or a family member. So you're basically, you know, it works with whatever restrictions. So yeah, they're just trying to get tourism started up again in the area.
Okay. How many teams are they hoping to attract? What's the goal?
I think they're doing a maximum of like 110 teams. They're not taking, 110. So they won't take any more than that. So 110 teams of two.
And are they still accepting applications or is the event already filled up?
No, I think they're still accepting applications. But you just have to go to their website and contact one of those hotels and then you can register for it. And I think it seems like a really fun event. Like, I would love to be able to go and see what all these producers do in their day-to-day lives. So,
well, maybe maybe one of the bosses at the Western Producer will give you a couple of days off. Maybe, or I guess it's on a weekend, so you could go. So,
but I should just do it because, I don't know, I got to get kind of a sneak peek of what some of the like, things you do with the producers are, and they sound like so much fun. So,
all right. Well, thanks, thanks, Melissa, for telling us a bit about this Lethbridge Odyssey, and thanks for coming on Between the Rows.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That was Melissa Bazan, a journalism student at the University of Regina, and an intern at the Western Producer. That's it for this week's show, the first one of summer 2021. I'm Robert Arneson of the Western Producer. Thanks for listening.
Part of being a farmer is being an accountant and a mechanic and a chemist. You have lots on the go. So FarmLink makes your grain marketing go further. We help you reach your financial goals with calculated sales decisions. No bias, just solutions and results. Plus, with our new app, GrainFox, we bring every opportunity right to your fingertips. Literally. Start seeing the returns that'll get your family ahead. You've earned it. FarmLink. Your work is worth more. Get started at farmlinksolutions.ca.